This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
On Hope 103.2, joining us, the producer and director of a new film, Envoy Shark Cull, Andre Burrell. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to talking about it.
This movie is one that you've described as a passion project. Why are sharks something you wanted to talk about a bit more?
Look, I started scuba diving. I've always liked sharks as a kid and, like, I always had a bit of a fascination with them. But I started scuba diving probably somewhere between 7 and 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly. And that really was a game changer for me. Not just sharks, but about the ocean in general, getting under the surface and actually spending time in their environment. And it's really is an otherworldly place. It is quite incredible when you actually get down there. And you really also notice that things you've been told maybe about certain animals, sharks specifically, is not really true at all. The way they behave and the calmness of them and the calculatedness of them and the shyness of them most of the time, that really changed so much for me. And then I just got really, really passionate. And then I learned what the Queensland Shark Control Program and what the New South Wales Bay of Protection Program really were. And, it all spiraled from there, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and that world of the underwater environment, it's something that unless you're a surfer or a diver or somebody that's immersed in that space, many of us don't really get to see so much. So when you went down and saw what was there, what did you love the most and what were you most drawn to?
I think everything's just a bit slower down there, which is why I liked it. First of all, I lead a pretty fast-paced life. I've always been doing a lot of things and spinning a lot of plates. I don't know why. It's just kind of what I do. So getting down there, everything's in slow motion. Like everything just is a bit more chilled and moves a bit more slowly. And then what I really loved about it was just the variety of, like, within one camera shot or in your line of sight, you can see hundreds of different species just all in the one I guess picture, and it's really not something you can experience on land. And then other than that, just seeing the perfection of everything, it's really hard to describe. I'm probably doing a terrible job of it. The film does a better job of describing it and making you feel it, but it's very hard to describe.
No, but it paints a beautiful picture, and I think what you capture in that sense of a slower pace and a slow motion environment is probably what really draws a lot of people into the water. And then what your movie does is kind of, in the best of ways, it like slaps us in the face with the reality of what the Queensland government and New South Wales government are doing with their versions of what they call a shark control program. Can you explain that to us, what the program looks like and a little of its history?
Absolutely. So I'll start with New South Wales because they started first. 1937, there was a series of shark bites in New South Wales on Sydney beaches. At the time, there was no understanding for it. There was a lot of fear. So the position was we need to do something about it. We now know that it had a lot to do with abattoirs dumping, you know, blood and guts into water and it flushing out river systems and all that sort of stuff. We have a better understanding now. Mm. We didn't at the time. So at the time, this call was put out, you know, in the media and in the papers of like, help us come up with ideas of how to protect beaches from sharks. There was ideas of spotter programs. There was ideas for sonar kind of repellents, bubble nets. And the one that stuck was probably the least creative one, and that was fishing nets. Put fishing nets off our beaches, and that's what shark nets are. They are only 150 metres long. So when you consider that to the size of, say, Bondi, it's quite comically small. Not only that, they don't go to the bottom. New South Wales don't go to the top. They're bottom set, so they don't go to the top. They're only 6 metres high.
Wow.
In about 12 metres of water. They are there to entangle and to kill things. They are a fishing net. So the premise of the program is catch and kill sharks, less sharks around, less shark bites. To go into Queensland now, they kind of jumped on the bandwagon in 1962. A little bit behind on this, and they still are today. I'm sure we'll come to that in terms of modernizing programs. And same thing, fishing net set 500 meters off our beaches. Queensland do it a little different. They top set their nets, and again, 180 meters long, 6 meters deep in 12 meters of water. Comically small when you think of, say, the stretch of Snapper Rocks, which is the very southern end of the Gold Coast, all the way up to Broadbeach. It's about a 30-kilometre run, and there's 11 nets. So 11 times 183, call it 2 kilometres. 2 kilometres of netting covers 30 kilometres of Gold Coast, and they don't even go to the bottom. They're set to entangle and kill sharks. Again, the thought process being less sharks, less bites. Queensland then also have fishing hooks in the water with a piece of chum on them, a piece of bait that are near nets, or in some areas they're used exclusively, there are no nets, trying to lure sharks in, get them to bite the hook. They then essentially stay hooked until they die, unless the contractor who maintains this equipment comes along and the shark's still alive. And if it's unfortunate enough to be one of 19 target species, it will be shot in the head and killed.
Ah. So between these two programs, we're looking at things that are roughly sort of 70 to 100 years old. That does feel like something that by now we should definitely have updated practices to. And as you've mentioned, if it's based in this idea of killing sharks specifically, it seems to not be doing a very effective job of that. So what would the motivation be now, do you think, to catch and kill sharks and then all of the other wildlife that gets caught up in them, like turtles, stingrays, etc.? What's the point of doing it?
What I've come to the firm opinion through this process, and I didn't have this at the start of the project, but I certainly do have it now, is it is an almost exclusively political issue. It's not about the environment. It's not about swimmers' safety. It is a political issue, and it is done to give political cover. If politicians can say, yeah, but we have the shark control program, it spans this many beaches, we kill this many sharks a year, when a bite does happen, they have some political cover. And the sad reality of it is, you know, the longer I'm around this, the firmer my opinion becomes on that. Is just out of fear or lack of political courage or lack of backbone. A progressive politician that listens to the science and listens to the facts would go, well, this is rubbish. Like, we shouldn't be doing this anymore. Here's 5 better ways of doing it. Yeah, this one works in North Queensland where the water's calm, but it won't work in Southern Queensland or New South Wales where the swell's bigger. But in those areas, we have these solutions. Like, there's all this modern technology, like technology that reflects that we're in 2021. It all exists, and there's a perfect solution for every region. There's no one perfect solution for all the regions, but there is something that suits every region. And the fact that it's not being used, it's not down to cost. We costed it out. So we actually looked at every single protected beach, and we looked at alternatives that would work at that beach, and we costed it out, and it would cost less than the current programs.
And you can hear the way that that has frustrated you, and I'm no doubt, and no doubt the way it will have frustrated other environmental activists particularly as well. But coming back to the sharks themselves for a second, there is this narrative that exists, and maybe it's the Jaws factor, I don't know, but something that tells us sharks are scary, they're violent, they hunt humans, and that's just how some people feel about these creatures. But can you tell us a little bit more about sharks and their role in our ecosystem and what their true nature is really like?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, what their true nature is really like, and then I'll talk about the ecosystem. They do not hunt humans. That is the most, it's obviously come from Jaws and you know, mainstream media stories of maybe, you know, chomping great white jaws on the front page of the paper anytime a shark's sighted somewhere or whatever it might be. It's just not the case. They are very calm, they are very calculated. And occasionally, just like all of us, they make a mistake. And that is all it is when you see an incident, a shark bite incident happen. And sometimes, unfortunately, because they do have sharp teeth and they are a large animal, that ends in tragedy. But to say that they're out there lurking and hunting and stalking and whatever kind of hyperbole you might see out there, it's just not correct. When you spend time with them underwater, they're very calm, they're very calculated, they're very conservative with their energy. So that's a little bit about their true nature in terms of their role in the ecosystem. The best way to describe it is to use a reef ecosystem. And we use this example in the film. So without sharks on a reef ecosystem, middle fish will explode. So all the fish that are kind of in the middle of the food chain, and there's far, far, far too many of them, because sharks aren't keeping their numbers in check. And also sharks take out the sick and unhealthy ones. So they generally keep fish populations healthier. But in terms of raw numbers, you'll see fish numbers, middle fish numbers boom. From there, they eat all the coral, they eat all the smaller fish before you have what's called a trophic collapse, which is basically the food web, the trophic web, collapses. There is nothing left for anything to eat, so it's completely barren. And this has been documented on a number of reefs around the world. One of the most well-known examples is in the Bahamas. Before sharks were protected in the Bahamas, they had so many of their reefs completely die. And I mean all the way down to the coral. It's not just the fish. The coral dies too. And it just looks like a barren wasteland. It really is quite a sad sight. It's just it looks like a graveyard, really. Like dead coral looks almost, it looks eerie. It looks like bones. You go from this thriving, beautiful reef, take out the sharks, dead. So that's one example there. Another one is with dugongs. You know, dugongs graze on seagrass. No sharks around. Dugongs don't have to be on their toes, so to speak.
Right.
They can just swim around munching on seagrass all day, and they wipe out seagrass meadows, and then eventually they too die out. So there's so many examples like that, but the best way to describe it is they keep the whole ecosystem in check, and that sometimes is hard for people to understand, especially fishermen. You know, you can see sharks as the enemy; they take their catch.
Yeah.
But the reality is, no sharks, big picture, long term, means no fish.
Right, and I'm no scientist, so I might not express this entirely correctly, but I even know with that seagrass, like that absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide, so it's kind of like the trees of the ocean in a way that improve the oxygen and kind of that side of the equation too. So each of these little elements actually has quite an important role to play.
Exactly right. You're quite right in that kelp and seagrass store more carbon than rainforests. So yeah, having that wiped out is a very bad thing. And then look, you can go really, really deep on this, but plankton, phytoplankton, which kind of hang around the surface of the ocean, they produce more oxygen than our rainforests too. So kelp and seagrass store more carbon. Phytoplankton, which lives on the surface of the ocean, produces more oxygen than the rainforest. So the whole ocean keeps us alive. And if you start pulling at, Jenga blocks of that ecosystem, it's quite a bad idea.
And given that this ecosystem is underwater, it's not something people see very much, that does mean that it's quite back of mind in terms of how people prioritise it and, you know, what they see as needing to be done in this space. With your film, what are you hoping the result of it becomes?
That's a really insightful point. I always think of the surface as the ocean as like this great divide. Like you can feel so disconnected from anything that's under it, and what happens down there is not my problem, and what we kill down there doesn't really matter because you can't see it. It's not as visual as you know, cutting down koala habitat or whatever the example might be on land. So look, our goal for the film is to educate, and then I firmly believe that when people are more educated on this topic, they will feel the same frustration, I guess anger, that I feel about these programs. So we do that in two ways. It's kind of part nature doco, which is showing the beauty and just, you know, all those gorgeous slow-mo Ultra HD shots of the underwater world, and it's part investigative doco where we look into this program and the politics behind it and the legalities behind it, and there's a few twists and turns along the way. By combining those two things, I hope we educate and we inspire.
And it certainly does a really good job at that. It's beautiful, and then it's also really educational and insightful. And, of course, we've got to mention it's narrated by Eric Banner, who many people will be familiar with and admire. Tell us about his involvement with the project. Was he really ready to sign on when you guys approached him?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we were actually really surprised how quick it happened. So we approached his management, and it all happened really fast. He took a few days to look into the subject matter, by all accounts. He dug into it, and you know, is this something he wants to put his voice to and believes in? And he came back to us with a resounding yes. And from the vibe I got from him during the recording process and all those kinds of things, like, truly passionate about it. And again, just he had no idea, like most of Australia and like me until 5 years ago. I didn't know what these programs are. So he heard us out, he dug into it, and here we are.
Yeah, and he's bringing it to life and hopefully getting a lot more, you know, eyeballs, ears, watching, listening to this film and the work that you guys are doing. Thank you so much for your time, Andre. We really appreciate it.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.